live from the News Talk WANI studios in Auburn, Alabama. This is Auburn Opelika This Morning.
Auburn Opelika This Morning, your News Talk and Information Station, and pleased to welcome in Dan McMillan, Dr. Dan McMillan, I should say, as I would have to say expert in the Holocaust. And I think the reason that we needed to have him on today was because special National Day of Remembrance, which it comes around annually during this time, but also 80th year as well. Dr. McMillan, welcome, by the way, to the show.
Thank you very much, Ben. Good to be with you.
Every year when we look at this and it gets talked about and we have special places set up in our community in the Auburn, Opelika, and Lee County area and people honor what takes place, it falls on a special day this year because it's also the 80th anniversary. And I think that's just something big to talk about.
Yes, that's right. 80 years ago today, the Red Army liberated Auschwitz, and that's why it's International Holocaust Remembrance Day, the 27th of January every year. And yes, it's I've been with the Holocaust for 50 years now. I read my first book on it when I was 12 years old, and that's part of why I took on German as a second language in high school and majored in German and history in college and ended up getting my doctorate in German history and wrote my book about the causes of the Holocaust for the general public. And you know, I think that it's interesting. I've struggled, as all historians have struggled down across these years, to try to explain in a way that's concise that people can digest about why this can happen, how this was possible, because there were so many things that had to come together to make this possible. That it's just easy to get to drown in the details, and you end up telling a story that's way too long and complicated for anyone to absorb in a reasonable amount of time. But I think I've kind of finally hit it. I think the kind of the single most important cause of the Holocaust that I want people to take away from our conversation, that I think people really need to understand, and that is that you can say that the Holocaust, as well as the murders of another 6 to 7 million victims who are not Jewish by the Nazi regime, were possible and were really easy and not at all morally troubling for the men who committed these murders, because they had decided, the ruling class really of our most advanced society had decided that individual human life has no inherent moral value whatsoever. I mean, in their view of the world, they saw world politics as a Darwinian struggle for survival among the races of the world, in which fit races would flourish and unfit races would be exterminated and disappear. And so the overriding goal of German policy was to ensure the long-term survival of the so-called German race. Mm-hmm. And partly this was going to be by conquering so much territory in Europe, particularly by annexing really all of European Russia, so that Germany would be big enough in land, resources, and population that it would be invulnerable to conquest. And also to exterminate the Jews, because it was believed that the Jews were the instigators of Marxism, of communism, and that the Jews divided and conquered the societies of the world by setting social class against social class with the Marxist theory of class struggle. And if you eliminated the Jewish people, you would permanently banish the threat of communist revolution and make Germany stronger, because Germany would be unified instead of divided by the divisive and destructive Jews. And that's the kind of thinking that led them to do this, and it also led them to feel that really, you know, ultimately an individual human life doesn't matter. If your death is necessary to achieving this overriding aim of Germany's long-term invulnerability and survival, or even if your death is just marginally convenient to that goal, then your life is forfeit. And so for these men, killing was just like drinking water. Mm-hmm. I think another factor just to keep in mind that helps us understand why people in that time were so callous is the slaughter of young men in the First World War. You know, 10 million men dying in battle, including more than 2 million Germans. If you take that as a percentage of the German population, scale it up to our population today, it would be as if we came off a war in which we lost 10 million dead in battle, not to speak of the maimed and wounded. And that then combined with the even bloodier context of the Second World War, just the massive slaughter in the Soviet Union of Soviet soldiers and civilians, in those contexts, human life had become effectively so cheapened, and violence, the threshold of violence had gotten so low that, I mean, yes, the Nazis, they had a definite stated reason for murdering the Jews and for murdering Soviet POWs and murdering gypsies and other groups, and that is, these various groups in some ways hinder or are destructive to our overriding goal of making Germany invincible, but ultimately they didn't really need a strong reason for doing any of this, and they didn't have to feel a strong sense of compulsion to do any of this, because to them, killing a human being had no moral implications at all. To them, killing was like drinking water. Mm-hmm. And that is the thing that I most want people to understand about the Holocaust. That is, I think, the reason why the Holocaust is the only historical event that frightens people, the only historical event that people, millions of people around the world want to deny actually happened, because it is a direct assault on the worth, the meaning, the significance, the value of all our lives, of yours, of mine, the lives of everyone in our audience who is listening to this. And I think that is the unique horror of the Holocaust, and that is what I most want people to understand about it, because it teaches us that the value we place on human life is something that we cannot take for granted. It's something that we must always affirm and defend.
Dr. McMillan, we always, and we have Holocaust survivors that have that live here in the area, and they usually speak, and we usually talk to survivors. Have you ever had a chance in your teachings and in your studies, and especially since you've basically, like you said, covered this for 50 years, to talk to somebody, and you basically specializing in German history, getting your doctorate in that, to sit down with former German soldiers or at least leaders during that time and talk to them about what they, like, their thought process? Were they just following orders? Did they buy in? You know, what was that mindset? Because as you just said, human life was nothing to them. Did that just travel through the ranks from, you know, top to bottom?
I think it was kind of pervasive, but it was especially strong among members of the SS, which is a paramilitary organization of the Nazi Party that organized and carried out most of the killings. And those people, it was a self-selected group of ideological fanatics, especially loyal to Hitler. And so those men actually it wasn't just that they accepted committing murder, they were proud of it. They actually saw the willingness to just heartlessly slaughter women, children, babies, defenseless civilians, as a sign of their inner strength and mental toughness. There were, however, a lot of other killers. And really, when you talk about perpetrators of the Holocaust, you're talking about as many as 200,000 German and Austrian men, as well as maybe a couple thousand women, and most of them among the most successful, highly educated members of those societies. There were a lot of other people, though. You can think of people lower down, ordinary soldiers and men who were conscripted into so-called police battalions that once they were sent east, they found out their job was shooting Jewish civilians into mass graves. Those men were not necessarily Nazis and didn't necessarily buy in to the whole theory that explained why this was doing. And what's interesting about them is that we also find that it's if you put people in the right circumstance, it's very easy to get even perfectly normal people who don't have a really strong prejudice, who don't feel hate, who don't buy into an ideology, nonetheless to kill. And in particular, one of the things that's really striking is the way that people how quickly we adapt to different circumstances and how quickly we adjust our ideas of right and wrong. And there's a particularly good study by the historian Christopher Browning called Ordinary Men about one of these police battalions, one of these shooting squads. And, you know, you took these men out of civilian life. You put them in hostile territory in Poland where they depended on each other, gave them a uniform and a gun. These are your instructions. And suddenly, as long as the men around them agreed to shoot, then they just could not do it also. And within a short time, everyone in the unit sort of agreed, this is morally okay. This is what we're here to do. This is our mission. And that, I guess, is another thing that I guess is a striking lesson of the Holocaust, which is that I think although most human beings want to do the right thing, our definition of what the right thing is can change very quickly when our circumstances change, and especially if there is an authority figure that is telling us to adopt a different kind of morality than what we grew up with. That's quite astonishing also.
Well, your book, titled, of course, How Could This Happen? I think that pretty much sums it up. And I ask that, especially when you throw those numbers out. That's something that people we've had on the show have never brought that up before. You look at the deaths that were caused. If you related that to today's numbers, you'd be talking tens of millions of people. And by comparison, you mentioned them. It sounds like a buy-in philosophy. So was that what motivated Hitler? Get as many people on his side as possible, get them to buy into what he was believing, and then all they had to do was get a certain number of followers, and then the rest would just kind of fall in line. I hate to use the word peer pressure, but that just sounds like what it was.
Well, you know, you're right. I mean, particularly with this last group of young men that I was talking about who weren't Nazi fanatics, I think peer pressure was a huge part of it. The thing is about history, Hitler's ideas about the Darwinian struggle for survival among races and, you know, killing people by the millions is fine. That was only the most extreme expression of that way of thinking about world politics and about the races of the world. Was not unique to Hitler. It was almost universal in the Western world. And the same kind of thinking was used by our country and the countries of Europe to justify the creation of our colonial empires in Africa or Asia or, in our case, the Philippines. You know, the idea that the influence of Darwin's thinking at that time is that people developed this idea that the different nationalities of the world, each one is a race with its own genetic signature, and each so-called race evolved from the apes to a different degree and in different ways, and some races, especially Anglo-Saxons, were the best on top, and others were of far less value, and some had no value at all. And that kind of so-called social Darwinist racism was not unique to Germany. It was also in our country, in many other countries. I get the other factor, I think, that is important to understand this is that because for a number of circumstances came together that made Adolf Hitler, he wasn't just a powerful tyrant that no one would dare disobey. He became deified by his people and especially by his followers. He, partly because he had a string of successes from the early from the 1930s until really his run of success did not end until the German armies failed to take Moscow in December 1941. And these successes were so spectacular. We now know that his successes were due mostly to dumb luck and not to any skill on his part. But with the state-controlled media, Germans came to believe that Hitler was a miracle worker. They saw him as someone of superhuman abilities or even supernatural. He saw himself as an instrument of divine providence, and propaganda painted him that way. And so people went along with this also because a lot of them believed that if Hitler says it's moral, then it must be, because Hitler is above all law and morality. And that is something also, and that is something also that makes the political system of Nazi Germany unique among all political systems in history. I mean, you had cults of personality around Stalin or around Mao, but Germany is the only country where you really have a leader who is deified effectively in the way that Hitler was. And that also is a remarkable feature of that time.
Again, Dr. Dan McMillan, and you can find his book, How Could This Happen? As we're talking about the Holocaust, and we're talking about it being the 80th year of remembrance, on Day of Remembrance as well. And before I let you go, Dr. McMillan, I got to ask you this, because you said something at the beginning, and it's even in the notes that were sent to me, and I didn't know that this, and I guess it's just, it depends on the circle of friends that you run with. It said, why do millions deny that this even happened? I didn't know that this was a thing, the denial of the Holocaust. Happening.
It's a worldwide movement, Ben. It's amazing. And it's, I think that the people who are peddling this mind poison, I think that most of them are motivated by just a particularly nasty strain of anti-Semitism or hatred for the state of Israel. But on the other hand, there are all kinds of people who accept it, or at least consider it plausible, or at least enough to see, oh, maybe it didn't happen, or maybe it wasn't nearly as bad as they say. And I think, how is that possible? I think that for two reasons, I would argue. One is that, again, for the reasons I said before, that I think the Holocaust is the only event that frightens us, because it is such a direct assault on the value and meaning of our own lives. And I think the other part that's difficult is that it is, most people just don't, they can't understand how this was possible, because the many causes of the Holocaust, it's just such a complex picture that it's been very difficult for historians to explain why in a manner that is concise and that people can digest. And I've done my best in my own work to try to find a way to boil it down to under 10 minutes and focus on the main takeaways. And the main takeaway, again, is that the most important thing to understand why this happened is that human life lost all value among the ruling class of our most advanced society, and these are the factors that made that possible. I'm hoping that if people can focus on that, then this will become more comprehensible to them. And the more that people can understand how this could happen, the less likely they are to buy into the idea that it didn't.
Speaking of buying, they can find your book. I'm sure they can look it up and find it on Amazon. Is there anywhere else they need to go to try to find more about you and find more about what you do?
I would love for people to go to my website. It's actually, I work now in politics. I fight against big money in politics. But in my bio on my website is information about my book. And my organization is called Save Democracy in America. And the website is SaveDemocracyInAmerica.org, SaveDemocracyInAmerica.org. But if you just Google Dan McMillan Money in Politics or Dan McMillan Holocaust, you'll find your way to my political or personal website.
Again, Dr. Dan McMillan on his book, How Could This Happen? Be sure to go and check out the website, as he had mentioned. PhD in German history from Columbia, and very insightful on this day of remembrance, on the 80th year. And you can catch his book on this day of remembrance here on the 27th of January. Auburn, Opelika this morning, your news talk and information station. More in a moment.
War Eagle, this is Coach Bruce Pearl, and you're listening to the Abby Award-winning Auburn, Opelika this morning with Ben Taylor on News Talk WANI.